A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In a black-and-white film, titles appear over an embroidery sampler. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Spencer Tracy in Clarence Brown's production of Edison the Man. Copyright 1940 by Lowe's Incorporated. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding from the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Carol Hostetler and Jan Stankus. Read by Margot Stage. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203. Credits continue, with Rita Johnson as Mary Stillwell, Lynn Overman as James J. Bunt Cavett, Charles Coburn as General Powell, Gene Lockhart as Mr. Taggart. Produced by John W. Considine, Jr., directed by Clarence Brown. Screenplay by Talbot Jennings and Bradbury Foote. Original story by Doris Carey and Hugo Butler. Musical score, Herbert Stothart. Director of photography, Harold Rawson, ASC. Film editor, Frederick Y. Smith. Technical advisors, William A. Simons, the Edison Institute, and Norman R. Spiden, director of historical research, Thomas A. Edison Incorporated. Now, a quotation appears. The true test of civilization is not the census, nor the size of cities, nor the crops. No, but the kind of man the country turns out. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Now, at night, people line a city street. Model A cars drive past. An archway made of sparkling electric lights reads, Golden Jubilee of Light, 1879 to 1929. Inside a grand ballroom, men in tuxedos and women wearing long, glittery gowns take their seats. A fretful man approaches the head table.
Mr. Parks.
An elderly gentleman turns.
Mr. Edison hasn't even left the house yet, sir.
Have you any idea what's keeping him?
No, sir, I haven't.
You'd better phone again and ask.
Yes.
Wait. You'd better go over there yourself and hurry.
Yes.
Turning away, the man runs into a banquet guest, then hurries on. Now, a man's hand writes with a fountain pen to a very pretty girl. He signs it, Thomas A. Edison. Smiling, the white-haired Edison hands the note to a schoolgirl next to him on a sofa. Across from them, a boy holds a notepad.
Thank you.
He hands her the pen.
Do you know a fountain pen has always been a mystery to me?
Can I put that in our school paper, Mr. Edison?
Nancy, please, that's a foolish question. Now, Mr. Edison.
Nancy. Is your name Nancy?
Yes, sir, Nancy Gray.
Nancy. That's a pretty name. I always liked the name of Nancy.
It was your mother's name, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I like it.
Now, Mr. Edison, what is your formula for success?
We know his formula for success, don't you remember? Success is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Isn't that right, Mr. Edison?
Mm-hmm. Of course, that 1% inspiration is very important, you know. You have to have it. You can't invent it.
You can't learn it in school, either.
What's that?
You can't learn it in school, either.
No, I guess you can't. Although I was never in school long enough to find out.
You weren't? Who taught you then?
A school marm.
But you said you didn't go to school.
Nancy again, my mother.
Oh.
What do you think was the greatest invention? The printing press, the electric light, the radio?
The greatest invention?
Yes, sir.
Oh. A blade of grass.
But that isn't an invention, Mr. Edison.
Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes. That's nature's invention. Do you ever stop to think what makes it grow? What makes it green?
No, sir.
Mr. Edison, what would you say is the most valuable thing in the world?
Oh, that's easy. Time.
Time?
Mm-hmm.
Because all the money in the world won't buy 1 minute of it.
The man from the banquet rushes in.
Mr. Edison, are you ready to leave for the banquet?
Oh, Paul, I'm sorry. I forgot all about the time. I never carry a watch.
Never carries a watch. That's important.
Yeah, human interest stuff.
Goodbye, Nancy. Good luck.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Edison, and thank you.
You're welcome.
As the teenagers leave, Edison puts his hands in the pockets of his tuxedo jacket and heads toward the door. Pausing, he turns and walks back to a tray table covered with a white handkerchief. He pulls the handkerchief aside, then picks up a piece of apple pie and a glass of milk. Taking a bite of pie, he winks.
Never can tell about a banquet.
Now at the banquet.
It is fitting that we celebrate the golden jubilee of light in this replica of old Independence Hall. For I hold with Mr. Henry Ford, who built it here, that Thomas Edison, through his work, has framed a new kind of Declaration of Independence. He has declared through his work, and with a force greater than that of any man now living, the freedom of the human mind. The peoples of the world whom he has served are witnesses to this truth, and we are here to do him honor in their name. But there was a time when he had no witnesses. He had to make his way slowly against odds of ignorance, doubt, prejudice, and greed. After his early years in Port Huron, Mr. Edison worked as a telegrapher, quietly studying the use of a mysterious new power, electricity. In 1869, he left the West and went to Boston, where his first invention, a vote recorder, was rejected.
A man lights Edison's cigar.
He then came down to New York City.
Now, at night, a young Edison lights a cigar off a street lamp lighter's torch. Clutching a box wrapped in paper, Edison nods up at the lamplighter.
Thank you.
As Edison leaves, a policeman approaches.
Who's that fellow?
I don't know.
The lamplighter shoulders his ladder. The policeman stands on the corner and watches as Edison walks over to a door of a business, Gold Indicator Company of New York. He gives the door a jostle.
Hey, you!
The policeman starts over.
You there!
Edison walks around the corner. The policeman pulls his gun and follows Edison into an alley where he peers into a basement window.
Hey, what are you doing there? Come out of there!
The cop shoots into the air. Edison jumps.
Why didn't you stop?
Stop what?
You heard me. I shouted three times.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a little hard of hearing.
What's in the bundle? Come on, open it up.
Tom unwraps his bundle of books.
Oh, books.
What's going on here anyway?
I guess maybe I was a little hasty. Night.
Night.
An older man comes out.
I'm looking for a telegraph operator named Cabot, Bunt Cabot. Told me I'd find him in the Gold Indicator building.
Is your name Tom Edison?
Yes, sir.
I'm Bunt Cabot's uncle. Els is my name.
Oh, how do you do, Mr.
Come on down.
In the basement.
Down from Boston?
Yes, yes, sir.
Ever been in New York before?
No.
Aim to stay long?
Well, I hope so. Bunt promised to get me a job.
Oh, Bunt.
Yeah?
Here's Tom Edison.
A tall man with a suitcase holds out his arms.
You old lightning slinger, how are you? Well, how's the old tramp?
Spider and Frog here.
Well, what are you doing, going or coming?
I'm going.
Well, you can't do that. I just got here.
Well, it's his Uncle Ben's suggestion.
I told him he could stay if he'd work.
Yeah, but look what he wants me to work with.
A broom.
I'm a telegrapher. A man has got to draw the line somewhere.
Hey, how about that job you promised me?
Huh? Oh, you don't want to work in New York, Tom. This town is no good for you. The tall buildings crush the spirit and torment the soul.
Oh, no. Not going to torment my soul. Mm-mm. I always wanted to come to New York. Now I'm here, I'm going to stay here.
Tom turns and sniffs the air.
Somebody dead. What is that smell?
Oh, that's...
Bunt points at a mechanical contraption.
That's your boat recorder.
Gosh, I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, that's not the reason Congress didn't buy it. They just don't want their votes recorded. But I made a big success out of it anyway. It's marvelous for aging whiskey.
Aging whiskey?
Tom sniffs some barrels.
Ooh, smells like you're aging eggs.
Well, you just run the electricity up through it and jolt it up a bit. 10 minutes, you got 20-year-old whiskey.
Well, that settles that. That's my first and my last invention.
You don't mean that, Tom.
Well, anyway, it'll teach me a lesson not to invent things that people don't want.
Never mind, Edmund. Let you and me hit the road again.
No, not for me. I'm going to stay in New York.
You're not ready to settle down yet? You're the best telegraph operator in the country. Almost. You can get a job anywhere. Besides, look at the fun we'll have.
Never mind the fun. I've been a tramp operator long enough, and so have you. Now, if you take my advice, you'll stay here, too.
Well, I might as well.
Here, the place for you is San Francisco. San Francisco needs you. And here's the ticket as far as Hoboken.
Thanks for the lift. Across the river. Well, goodbye, Uncle Ben. If anything happens to me, you'll be sorry.
How about a little cash?
Tom holds out a coin and a wrinkled bill.
Help yourself.
Well, I'll take the five.
Oh, you sure you won't need that?
No, it's soft money. It's very soothing. Well, goodbye, Tom. I'll leave you with Uncle Ben. You can step right into my shoes. You look very good on the end of that broom. Uncle Ben, if you can stand that whiskey, it's yours. Goodbye, gentlemen. It's a beautiful world, and we will meet again to enjoy it.
Bunt raises his hat to them, then leaves.
My pal. And he runs away from me.
No, not from you. From that broom.
Well, now, how about it, Mr. Ells? How about me picking up where Bunt left off?
Well, you can help me with the cleaning if you want. Room and board light. You understand, temporarily, until you get a job.
That's fine. Thanks very much. And it'll be all right if I do a couple of experiments here while I'm working, you know, on my own time.
Oh, yes, if you're careful. But come on now, we've got work to do. Do you understand that thing?
Well, I should. I made it.
Well, turn it off. It's getting me down.
Tom walks over to the barrels and unhooks the wires. Later, he follows Ben into a large, darkened office holding a broom.
This is Mr. Taggart's office.
Oh, that's where all the big deals come off, huh?
I'm tired. Let's knock off a while, neat.
All right.
Ben lights gas lamps hanging on the wall. Tom frowns at a machine under a glass dome.
What's this contrivance?
What's that?
What is this thing?
Oh, that's a master transmitter. We get quotations direct from the floor of the gold exchange. And then we send it out on that machine there to all the brokers' offices. Ain't it a wonder?
It's a wonder that it works.
I'd like to meet this Mr. Taggart sometime.
Mr. Taggart? Meet him? To talk to?
Sure, why not?
That's good. Meet Mr. Taggart. Come on, let's eat.
Carrying his lunch tin, Ben walks into a spacious inner office and sits in a leather chair behind a large wooden desk. Tom carries in a book and his broom, then checks the name on the door.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Taggart?
Chewing, Ben leaps up.
Well, look what you made me do.
Mr. Taggart, it's a pleasure to meet you, sir. A real, unadulterated pleasure.
He shakes Ben's hand.
Now, Mr. Taggart, I'm going to be very brief because I know you haven't much time and neither have I. Have a cigar, Mr. Taggart.
Ben stops chewing and lights a cigar.
Don't mind if I do.
Ben, sit down. Please, by all means, sit down, Mr. Taggart. Now, Mr. Taggart, you've got money and I've got ideas. Together, we should make a great team.
Sounds good, young man. How much do you need?
Well, I'll make it light on yourself, Mr. Taggart.
Well, now, money's pretty tight right now. What do you say to $2 million?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Shall I wrap it up or send it?
Ben snubs out the cigar.
Stop your fooling, stop your fooling.
He crosses to a sofa.
I guess I better go and lay down a while. I ain't feeling so good. But this time of night I get all tuckered out.
Why don't you take a little nap, Mr. Ells? I'll clean up the office.
Help yourself to the lunch.
Oh, no, that's yours.
I ain't hungry. I keep worrying about Bunt.
At the desk, Tom opens his book.
I guess I won't get a wink of sleep tonight.
Oh, Mr. Ells, you shouldn't try to do two things at once. If you're going to sleep, sleep. If you're going to worry, why stay awake and make a good job of it.
Tom reads from his large, hardback book.
Listen to this, Mr. Ells, from Faraday's experiments with electricity.
Tom reaches for an apple.
The object of my search was for a way to convert magnetism into electricity. When I broke the current, a tiny spark leaped between the bits of charcoal. Lo, I beheld the embryo of electric light. But I have rather been desirous of discovering new facts concerning magnetoelectric induction than of exalting the force of those already obtained, being assured that the latter would find their full development hereafter.
He raises his head.
Hereafter? That's now.
Now, in the basement, Tom works at a lab table. Ben walks up and leans within inches as Tom connects a wire, sending out a spark.
Hey!
See that spark?
Why do you think I jumped?
It works, just like it said it would in the book.
You'll burn the building down first thing you know.
Oh, no, I won't, Mr. Ells. This is an experiment in electricity.
Electricity? That stuff's dangerous. Stop fooling with it down here.
How am I going to find out about it unless I fool with it? You told me I could experiment down here.
Oh, I'll lose my job. You want to get me fired?
Oh, no, Mr. Ells. I'd rather walk the streets hungry and homeless than have that happen.
Taken aback, Ben's eyes widen behind his small round glasses. Tom grabs his suit jacket and felt hat.
You've been too nice to me. I'll just go my way.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I didn't say anything about you having to go away.
Well, I'd rather go away than have you worry all the time.
Well, I'll be all right, but just go easy, that's all.
Thanks, thanks. You see, Mr. Ells, if that thing works, everybody's going to be able to use it all over the world.
What is it?
It's a new kind of light. Something that's never been seen before.
Are you going to make me mad again?
No, sir. Of course, I have to get the money to experiment.
Well, why don't you invent the money?
I'm going to get the money for Mr. Taggart.
Huh?
I'm going to sell Taggart the idea of a new stock ticker. That'll give me the money to carry on the experiment with light.
You ought to know by this time you can't see Mr. Taggart.
Say, you can see anybody if you just try long enough.
Buttoning his sleeves, Tom bounds up the wooden steps and out to the alley. Ben turns with a shrug, then goes back over to the table. With one glance back at the door, he picks up a wire and touches it down on the contraption. Later, in the large office, Tom passes men who stand jotting notes. A secretary looks over from his desk just outside Taggart's inner office.
Yes, what is it?
You know what it is. Same thing it was yesterday and the day before that and the day before that. I want to see Mr. Taggart.
It ought to be clear to you that he's too busy to see you.
You go in and tell Mr. Taggart I'd like to see him.
Tom glares at him. The secretary gets up and opens Taggart's door. Inside, a portly man with a bushy beard looks up from his ornately carved desk.
Shut that door. I don't want to be disturbed.
Beg pardon, sir, but a person named Edison is anxious to see you.
Well, I can't see any person named Edison today.
It's very important, Mr. Taggart.
I'll see him next Christmas and shut that door.
He passes a paper to another man. The secretary closes the door with a smug smile.
Next Christmas, Mr. Edison.
Hmm?
Next Christmas, Mr. Edison.
Is it all right if I wait here?
That'll have a point.
One more drop and I'll sell out. It's a shaky market.
Frowning back at the office door, Tom stops by a long table filled with contraptions.
What time does Mr. Taggart go to dinner?
He doesn't go. It's brought to him.
The man returns to reading a ticker tape. The man checks his machine. Outside, investors look up at a sign showing changing prices. It stops moving.
Give us a bid!
Give us the quotation!
Inside.
It stopped. You ruined us.
Tom watches quietly.
What does it say?
She's busted.
Well, do something. Get Taggart.
As a crowd gathers, Tom climbs over a railing, then checks the ticker tape indicator machine. Taggart rushes out of his office and pushes through the crowd, then waves Tom out of the way. Outside, angry investors shake their fists.
We're downstairs for the battery connection.
If the trouble's up here, I can fix it. Get away. It's very simple. It's very easy.
How about a bit?
All right. Fix it. Fix it. Be quick.
Tom takes a seat, pulling some tools out of his pocket. On the sidewalk below, dozens of men stare up at the frozen price. With a peaceful expression, Tom goes about his work. Taggart glares at him. His secretary taps his knuckles together nervously. Outside, the price moves up a quarter.
It's just the contact spring that fell down between the gears.
What's your name?
Edison.
Can you keep that indicator running?
Yes.
You're hired. I'll give you $300 a month.
How much?
Isn't that enough?
I'm afraid if I got that much money for this job, I'd never have the courage to quit.
What do you want?
I want just 5 minutes of your time.
Gripping his lapels, Taggart walks back to his office. At the door, he spins on his heels.
Come into my office.
Yes?
A tall, distinguished man meets them at the door.
General Powell.
Good afternoon. That was quite a flurry.
This is the man who fixed the indicator. General Powell, Mr.
Edison.
General Powell, President of Western Union? You're another man I want to see.
I have no objection. You see, we own that gold indicator.
The tall man strides in ahead of Taggart. Tom follows with a glance at the secretary.
Merry Christmas.
The secretary turns away quickly and closes the door. Inside, Powell lights a cigar for Tom.
Thank you, sir.
They sit.
What kind of a stock ticker have you in mind?
A ticker that will give you quotations not only on gold, but on every stock in the market.
You really think you can do that?
Yes, sir, I think I can, if you'll just give me a chance. Certainly a good cigar, General.
What sort of a chance do you want?
Chance to experiment.
Young man, we can't afford to experiment. Not with green electrical workers. We've no guarantee that these theories of yours are workable.
Well, most electricity is theory yet.
That's the trouble. Beyond a point, what good is electricity anyway?
What good is a newborn baby?
Taggart looks to General Powell, who laughs and lights a cigar.
Mr. Edison, you're simply wasting my time.
Well, in that case, I won't waste mine.
Sit down, both of you. It's not going to do anybody any good if we all get excited and start jumping to our feet. Sit down.
Slowly, Tom and Taggart take their seats.
You want to use more imagination, Taggart. And you want to use more patience and tact. Mr. Edison, I'm very much interested in your idea for a stock ticker. And if you want to work, I'll give you an opportunity in our New York shop. And whatever you bring in to me that's new and practical, I'll buy.
That's great, General. All I want is a place to work and a few tools and some men to help me.
You'll have all that. Mr. Taggart's secretary will give you a letter to our foreman in New York.
Thank you, sir.
Not at all.
Thank you, Mr. Taggart.
Smiling, Tom walks to the door, then turns back and brandishes his cigar with a wink. Now, on a rainy street, a sign on a building reads, Western Union Workshop, second floor, Keystone Telegraph Key Manufacturing Company. Tom steps up to the door and puts down his bags. A woman, shielding herself with an umbrella, turns into the entryway and bumps into him.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't see you.
That's all right. You didn't hurt yourself.
No. Why are these things always so much easier to open?
Beg pardon?
Why are these things always so much easier to open?
Maybe I can help you.
Thank you.
He fiddles with her umbrella.
You work here?
Yes, upstairs.
I'm starting in downstairs today.
What do you do?
I'm an inventor.
Oh.
The wind snaps the umbrella inside out.
You see, I don't invent umbrellas.
Anyone could tell that.
Holding the skirt of her long dress, the pretty young woman marches upstairs to the second floor. Keeping one eye on her, Tom works the umbrella closed, then picks up his bundles and walks into the first floor Western Union workshop. Inside the large brick-walled space, men with their sleeves rolled up stand at workstations. Pulleys and wheels turn on their machines. A tall, thin man with a bushy beard looks up at Tom.
My word.
Drenched in his overcoat, Tom looks into the office window. The foreman comes out.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
I'm Tom Edison.
Tom hands him a letter.
General Powell thought that maybe...
The letter is self-explanatory.
Johnson tucks the letter away.
This way.
He leads Tom to a work table set up with small tools and drill bits.
You can work here. Naturally, anything you want is at your disposal.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
We'd like to have the home addresses of all our men. Where are you staying?
Right here.
I mean, where are you sleeping?
Well, for the present, I'll have to sleep here.
Johnson looks up from a notebook.
Very well.
He smiles.
General Powell says you're to draw some money on payday.
Well, that's very nice of the general. When is payday?
Next Saturday.
He leaves Tom by his table. Tom reaches into his trousers and pulls out a pocket knife and one coin. Holding a pipe, a man steps over from a nearby table.
My name is Michael Simon.
Well, how do you do? Mine's Edison.
And that is Mr. Ashton.
How are you?
How do you do?
Tom checks the umbrella.
What sort of work are you going to do here, Mr. Edison?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is fix an umbrella.
Michael's eyes widen as Tom springs open the broken umbrella. Later, Tom walks upstairs to the Telegraph Key Company, holding the folded umbrella. He passes men and women working at tables, then finds the owner of the umbrella sitting at a desk, tapping the arm of a telegraph machine. Beyond her, rain sheets the windows, printed with the word Keystone. Grinning, Tom stands at her desk while she frowns down at her work.
Excuse me, miss.
She looks up, her heart-shaped face framed by blonde curls.
Here's your umbrella.
Oh, it's you.
She smiles.
You fixed it. It looks all right again. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Don't mention
it. Tom stares at her as she continues her work.
You handle those keys very well.
That's my job, Mr.
Edison, Tom Edison.
Mine's Mary Stillwell.
Mary stands up and takes off her apron.
Dinner time. I'm hungry.
Beg pardon?
I'm hungry.
Tom fiddles with his pockets.
Rushed to work this morning without any breakfast.
So did I. And I got a lot of work to do yet before I can eat. Goodbye, Mrs. Stillwell.
Goodbye, Mr.
As Tom walks away, Mary stares after him, one arm in her overcoat. He glances back once, then leaves, and Mary breaks into a grin. Later, in a crowded cafe, Tom sits at a table reading a menu.
Yes, sir.
How much is apple pie in a glass of milk?
10 cents.
I'll have that.
Behind him, Mary comes in from the rain, tugging her umbrella closed. As she searches for an empty seat, Tom spies her. He gives a start, then shields his face as Mary makes her way toward his table. She pulls out a chair and starts to sit down. Tom gets to his feet.
Oh, hello.
Mary's eyes widen.
Well, it seems we'll have to have dinner together.
That's fine. Fine. You see, when I went back downstairs, I found out that I... won't you sit down?
Thank you.
The waiter brings Tom his apple pie and milk. Mary takes off her gloves.
I'll have the regular 35-cent dinner, please.
Tom coughs into his milk.
You eat very little for a big man.
Yes, yes, don't I?
Later, the waiter writes up a bill for 10 cents and 35 cents, totaling it out to 45. Tom takes it from him.
Oh, no. Please.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Miss Stewart.
They rise. As she steps away from the table, Tom tips the waiter. By the door, he stops at the counter and leans in toward the cashier.
This check is for 45 cents. Could you trust me for a day or two?
The cashier eyes the check, then Tom.
No. Maybe I could come back a little later and pay you.
No.
Mary gets out a coin and drops it behind Tom.
Mr. Edison, you dropped some.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
He hands the coin to the cashier, who gives him change.
Mr. Funny Fella, huh?
The cashier bites hard on the coin, then works his jaw in pain. Outside in the rain, Tom holds the umbrella for Mary as they walk to their building.
I didn't hear that dollar when it dropped.
I heard something and looked, and there it was.
Sure is nice to have somebody like you around to pick things up for me.
Do get out of the rain.
Yes, sir.
You bend your share of this umbrella.
In the entryway, the wind snaps the umbrella inside out.
When you get it fixed again, be sure to bring it back to me.
Now, Tom works at his table with his shirt sleeves rolled up, wearing a suit vest and a string bow tie. Johnson holds out an envelope.
Well, here's some money for you.
Oh, thank you.
Tom gives some to Michael.
Mr. Simons, here's the money I owe you. I'm very much obliged.
Oh, it's a pleasure, I'm sure.
Thanks, Bob. Oh, anytime.
Johnson studies papers on Tom's desk.
Yeah, I'm ready for some men now.
Say, how many of these machines are you going to make?
Just one.
You've got drawings enough here for a dozen.
If one works, I'm lucky.
All right, I'll get you some men.
Mr. Johnson, if it's all the same to you, I'd like to pick them out myself.
Well, of course.
Tom collects his drawings and steps over to Michael. Taking the pipe out of his mouth, Michael looks at a drawing, then back at Tom, who laughs.
I'm afraid Mr. Simon isn't very original.
I guess he's right. All right.
Tom pats Michael's shoulder, then walks through the shop with Johnson. They stop to watch a man who struggles with an arch-shaped frame on a metal base. Tom leans in.
Spring's too strong.
Maybe you could make a better one.
Say, a fella can tell a bad egg without being able to lay one.
The man throws a glance at Tom, then turns back to his machine. A piece snaps loose.
Sorry, I guess you're right.
Tom nods to Johnson.
Graham, Lundstrom, Bigelow, report to Mr. Edison.
The men surround Tom.
Boys, I'd like to get some models made of each one of these sketches. Would you like to try that one?
Sure.
I think that'll suit you. And here's one that'll keep a tomcat home nights.
The tougher the better.
Go to it, boys.
Tom offers one to the man with the bushy beard.
Would you like to try this one?
Thank you very much. I prefer to work for the company.
All right. Well, I guess I'll work for this myself.
Simon, I'm sorry, but it looks like I'll have to lay you off.
Johnson claps Michael on the shoulder and leaves. With a look of concern, Tom walks over.
Have you got another job?
No.
Look, I'm sure you can do this.
I'll try my best, Mr. Edison.
Sure, I know you. Do you mind working a little while tonight until I come back? I've got something very important to do.
No, I don't.
Thanks.
Tom takes a metal file and taps on a pipe that runs up to the ceiling. At her second floor desk, Mary turns toward a pipe that runs up a column. Smiling, she takes a letter opener from her desk drawer and taps the pipe. As Tom taps back, Michael leans in. Tom looks up at the ceiling.
What are you doing?
I'm asking the young lady to have supper with me.
Tom grins as he and Michael stare at the ceiling.
What does she say?
Says she'd be delighted. Want to try it?
Tom leaves him the file. Later, Tom and Mary walk.
It's been a wonderful evening. Such a dinner and the concert. I didn't know you liked music.
I do, if it's simple enough.
Mary looks in a storefront.
Look, isn't that a lovely sofa?
I could tell better if I could see it better. Wait until they can light their windows with electric lamps, then you'll really see something.
What is electricity?
Hmm?
I've been working around for over a year and don't even know what it is.
Nobody does. An old Scotch telegrapher told me once it was like a dachshund dog, long enough to stretch from Edinburgh to London. You pull his tail in Edinburgh and he barks in London. Nobody knows what goes through the dog or over the wire. You know, there's electricity in people, too.
I know it. Sometimes my hair gets so full of it, I can't comb it.
Really? I never think so to look at it now. Maybe you're a human electric battery. Let's experiment.
He touches her hand and she jumps.
That's what you are, a human electric battery.
Did I shock you?
No, not exactly. Let me have your hand.
A policeman watches.
There's a lot of electricity in you. I can feel it going up my arm. It sort of tingles.
Hadn't we better be going?
Wait a minute. This is a scientific experiment. Now, you know, the theory of electricity is that it always travels in one direction. You see, from positive to negative. Positive, negative.
He points to Mary, then to himself.
We're wrong somewhere.
Oh, you're the positive one, is that it?
Very positive.
And should that make me negative?
I hope not. Are you?
Mary smiles. Tom rolls his eyes at the policeman.
Somebody's always interfering with science.
He takes her arm and leads her away. Now, men file into the shop with Michael.
And does the machine really work?
Yeah, it did at 4 o'clock in the morning when I went home. I left him still working. After 10 weeks of it, too. I'll show you.
Tom sleeps on his work table.
Boys, come on, I'll show you.
Men gather around a machine on a metal base covered by a glass dome.
Now watch.
Michael taps a telegraph arm. His head resting on some books, Tom hides his face under his hat brim and smiles.
Wait a minute.
Michael taps Tom's shoulder.
Mr. Edison. I don't know, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work?
No.
Gosh, that's funny. It should work.
Tom connects a wire and taps a telegraph. The ticker tape advances.
Oh.
Congratulations, Tom. It's a good job.
That's fine, Tom.
I wouldn't have believed we could do it.
What do you mean, we?
Mr. Edison, that's a very fine piece of work.
Thanks. Now, what time is it?
7 o'clock. Oh, gosh. I got to be in New York by 9.
Well, plenty of time.
Somebody put my hat on for me, will you?
Sure.
Well, here we go, boys.
His hat cocked back, Tom carries the foot-high glass-domed ticker tape machine through the shop as the men wave him off. Out in the building's entryway, Mary stands on the steps.
Tom!
He holds out his invention.
Think they'll like it?
Of course they'll like it.
How much do you think I ought to ask them for?
What do you think it's worth?
I don't know. I'd like to get $2,000 for it.
Suppose you let them make you an offer before you say anything.
That's a good idea.
She touches the glass dome.
You think you're nothing but wood and metal and glass, but you're not. Your dreams and hard work and heart. You better not disappoint us.
I'm glad you said us, Mary.
Good luck, Tom.
Mary's eyes twinkle. She stands on her tiptoes and kisses him on the lips. Stepping back, Tom nearly drops the stock ticker.
Oh, Tom!
Tucking his machine against his chest, he walks away. Now in Taggart's office, Tom smokes a cigar while Taggart and General Powell run ticker tape through the machine.
There you are, General. What do you think of it?
Why, you've done it. And that's that.
Taggart nods grimly.
Looks like it.
Tom grins at the General.
Would you be interested in taking over a plant to manufacture these tickers?
Oh, no, sir. I'd like to sell it outright. I got some other things I want to do.
What are some of these other things?
Well, I'll bring them around and show them to the General when I think they're right. You see, I like the cigars I get here.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm now in association with the General, so let's talk business.
I'm ready.
How much do you want for this stock ticker?
Well, I... Suppose you make me an offer, General, whatever you think is fair.
How about $20,000?
Tom swallows and turns to Taggart.
How much?
I said $20,000.
$20,000. Well, I... $20,000.
Perhaps a fair price with world rights would be
$30,000. $30,000?
Yes.
$30,000. Well,
Come now. Let's make it $40,000. World rights and everything. I really think that's fair.
Yes, General. I think that's fair.
The General takes up his pen.
Oh, General, before you make that out, you advanced me some money, you remember. $215 in cash, $106.23 in material. It comes to $321.23.
Are you sure that's correct?
Yes, sir, I'm sure.
All right. We'll forget it.
He hands Tom a check.
Thank you, sir.
What are you going to do with all that money?
I'll tell you one thing I'm not going to do with it. I'm not going to buy any gas stock.
You might do worse.
I doubt it, Mr. Taggart. Oh. Here are the patent papers, General. They're yours now. And thank you, sir.
Don't mention it. Goodbye.
One moment. Don't congratulate yourself too much. You may be interested to know that we were prepared to go as high as $60,000 for your invention.
You were?
We were.
It may interest you to know that I was prepared to sell it for
$2,000. Gripping his lapels, Taggart turns back to the laughing General with a glare. Later, at the shop.
Mr. Edison, what happened?
Hold your horses, boys. I'll tell you all about it later.
Tom strides through the crowd to the pipe by his table. Glancing up at the ceiling, he pulls the metal file from a rack and taps on the pipe. Upstairs, Mary leans with one ear close to the pipe. In the shop, Lundstrom grins broadly.
He sold it.
Tom smiles thoughtfully up at the ceiling as he scrapes the file against the pipe.
$40,000.
Mary looks up from her end of the pipe, her eyes glistening.
He says, will you marry me?
Mary taps back.
She says, yes, Tom.
The huddled men break into grins.
He says, come right down.
Leaning in, Mary taps her letter opener against the pipe.
She says right away.
Tom turns as if he's mad at the eavesdroppers.
Congratulations!
Ashton steps forward.
Mr. Edison, I'd like to work with you wherever you go.
Well, sure, sure.
He stares at the door as Mary walks in, her eyes fixed on Tom. A soft smile plays at her lips. Tom takes off his hat and strolls over.
Congratulations!
She stands with her hands folded as Tom faces her. Surrounded, they gaze at each other awkwardly. Bigelow stands next to them like a referee.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Well, what are we waiting for?
She takes his hand and they embrace. Now, Tom and Mary stand at the front of a church. She smiles up at him as he slips a gold wedding band on her finger. Sitting in a pew, Lundstrom grins and Bigelow scowls at him. Now, Tom shows Mary a parcel of land. Words appear: Menlo Park, plan of laboratory, premises of Mr. Thomas A. Edison. Blueprint drawings turn like pages in a book. Builders nail in floorboards. A man steadies the frame of a wall. Now a long two-story laboratory with several chimneys and a broad porch stands on a lawn. Inside, Michael Simons adds a weight to one side of a scale. Jack Bigelow dips a glass rod into a steaming concoction. Bob Ashton stirs a large wooden mortar and pestle. Now Tom signs a paper that reads, Original Alarm, 1872. A newspaper reads, Daughter born to inventor's wife. Tom shakes his head in wonder. More letters of patent appear, electric pen, and quadruplex telegraph. Tom thumbs through salary envelopes. A newspaper reads, Mrs. Thomas Edison, mother of son, Thomas Alva Edison Jr. In the laboratory, Tom hands out cigars.
A boy, too.
That's wonderful, Tom. First a girl and now a boy.
Well, it has to be one or the other, doesn't it, Jack?
Tom pulls a cigar out of the box and puts it in Michael's mouth.
Thank you.
Do I smoke cigars?
Oh, yes, but I'll save it for Sunday.
Well, here's one for Monday, too. Come on, there's one more piece here.
Thank you again.
Thank you, Tom.
Can't tell when this will ever happen again. Maybe not for another year.
Now, at a breakfast table, Tom feeds his infant son as his daughter watches.
More? Great shakes, what a capacity.
Tom, it's nearly 9 o'clock.
Is it?
You're spoiling that child.
Oh, a man has a right to humor his youngest.
You've been late to the shop 3 mornings this week. What are you meant for?
They'd bear up under it, wouldn't they? Would they, Dash? They'd bear up under it. Come on, you better feed yourself now.
Addie's got to go to work, make more money, buy more oatmeal.
Don't let me hurry you.
Go to it.
It's been nice seeing you, Mr. Edison. Do drop in when you're out this way again.
She puts on his hat.
Goodbye, darling. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, honey.
He tips his hat.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye.
Now, Tom strolls up to the laboratory porch and greets Bunt and Ben.
Well, Mr. Ells, Bunt, how are you?
Is this 7 o'clock?
Well, it was 7 o'clock.
Yeah, 2 hours ago. What kind of a businessman are you anyway?
What have you been doing all this time?
I've been feeding the baby. There you are, Uncle Ben. The wheels of industry have to stand still while this man feeds his baby.
Yeah, the wheels ain't standing still. Listen to them.
He means his own wheels, huh, Bunt?
Bunt pumps Tom's arm.
It won't do any good, Bunt. I'm broke. You certainly are looking fine. Broke. Are you really? Practically.
Well, you can't be. You're an important businessman. You got a laboratory and a wife and children and all that kind of stuff. Besides, I only want $5.
We'll see if you can get 10 and give me 5 of them. Come on.
Bunt, you could have at least let him finish saying hello.
They go into an office.
Must be a leak in your business. Something wrong with your bookkeeping.
There are the books. Look them over.
2 piles of paper.
Books? I don't see any books.
There they are, both of them. Bills I owe, bills owed me, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know, but that's the whole thing in a nutshell.
Yeah, nutshell it right.
Come on upstairs and have a look.
No wonder you're insolvent.
Insolvent? Insolvent. Sounds better than just being broke. Means the same thing, though, doesn't it?
Bunt and Ben follow Tom upstairs. Tom gestures toward the open floor of the busy laboratory. Gas pipes line the ceiling of the barn-like room.
Well, you really have a nice place here, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Not trying to show off. I just wanted to prove to you, Bunt, that I spent the money.
He walks to Jack's table.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Tom.
Jack, any progress?
I've got it. I've got it sure. All I need is a couple days more.
That's fine. That's fine. I knew you'd get it. Stick to it now.
That's wonderful. You know, I never thought he'd get it.
Has he got it?
Sure, he said. You said.
He hasn't got a darn thing, but I like to hear him talk that way.
Hey, Tom, here comes the sheriff.
Uh-oh.
Tom leans over a banister and looks downstairs.
Oh, the sheriff in person. I'd better evaporate.
He puts on Bunt's derby hat. The sheriff walks up and stands with his hands in his pockets.
Looking for Thomas Edison.
Tom shifts his eyes toward Bunt. He shifts his eyes again, then winks. The sheriff glances over, then nods with a knowing smile. Tom walks downstairs, winking one more time on his way. The sheriff walks over to Bunt.
Which one of you gentlemen, Thomas Edison?
Can I help you?
You certainly can, Mr. Edison. There's a writ of replevin, Mr. Edison.
Oh, what does that mean?
A writ of replevin is an action to regain personal property illegally retained.
Such as what?
Such as this here machinery. It ain't paid for.
Oh, well, I wouldn't worry about that if I were you, Sheriff. I'd take care of all those things on the first of the month.
You ain't been taken care of, and that's what the trouble is.
Well, I might have overlooked a few little things.
There's a writ of attachment, Mr. Edison.
Oh, this is something different.
No, that's practically the same thing. Gives you a week to pay up your bills, and this machinery all goes back to factory.
I see. Anything else?
Yeah. Now, here's a summons to come to court and show cause why I shouldn't serve this here replevin.
No, this is no good now. You've already served the replevin.
Oh, no. No, look here. That writ of attachment nullifies all of that.
No, I see. Well, is that good?
Well, it sure. Doggone it. How do I know?
Maybe you need a habeas corpus. You got everything else.
Are you a drinking man?
Well, sure, but I'm sober now.
Me too. Let's go someplace where you can buy me a drink.
Oh, yeah, that's an idea.
I never indulge in legal discussion without benefit of spirit.
Bunt slips the papers into the sheriff's pocket.
Hey, Mr. Edison, I got a little invention of my own.
That's fine. Boy or girl?
Oh, no. I don't...
Ben looks in the office. Finding it empty, he opens a closet. Inside, Tom lies curled on the floor, sleeping.
Tom. Tom. Hmm. Sheriff's gone.
Tom crawls out, then looks up on all fours.
I'm an ostrich. Whenever I get in trouble, I stick my head in there and hide.
He looks at his piles of bills.
Why am I laughing?
I am in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. Sheriff said you'd got a week to pay the machinery company.
A week. A week. Doesn't seem possible you can destroy in a week what has taken 5 years to build up.
No, it's a shame. You must have a mint of money wrapped up in that laboratory.
No, it's not the money wrapped up in the laboratory. The lives that are wrapped up in the laboratory. It's come to mean everything that I ever set out to do. It means a weekly paycheck for all my men. It means home, shelter, clothing, and food for lots of families. Can't let a week destroy all of that. Uncle Ben, I've got to do something. And I'm open for suggestions.
Are you fooling, Tom?
I wish I was.
Nobody ever asked me for advice before.
Well, then you ought to have a lot of it stored up.
Well, it seems to me if I was in your place, you being an inventor and all that, I'd invent something.
Oh, you mean just invent something quick, like on the spur of the moment?
That's right. The quicker, the better.
Anything you suggest in particular?
How about that light you was always talking about? The one that was supposed to work by electricity, remember?
Yes, I remember.
Well, it seems to me this is about as good a time as any to invent that. Bunt's always talking about it. It ain't often he talks sense, but whenever he mentions that light, he sounds pretty reasonable. No two ways about it, Tom. If you could invent that...
Yes, if I could invent that. Uncle Ben, will you do something for me?
Sure I will, Tom.
Will you tell my wife I won't be home for dinner, and I may not be home for breakfast in the morning? I'm going to stay here and get busy on that light.
Later, Tom peers through a microscope in the dark, empty laboratory, his table lit by a gas lamp. He pulls back, then takes out the slide and tosses it aside. Now, in a smaller lab, Tom holds up a beaker filled with a dark liquid. His shoulders slump as he lowers it to a workbench. Mary peers through the glass panes of the door.
Tom.
As Mary steps closer, Tom slowly looks up from a book.
Hello, Mary.
Tom, look at you.
It'd be a good trick if I could do it.
Don't you think you ought to stop for a while?
I can't, not now.
But 4 days, Tom. The children have actually stopped asking for you. You've got to rest and eat.
I had some apple pie and milk a little while ago.
That was yesterday.
I've got work to do.
Can't be as important as all this.
Right now it's more important to me than anything in the world.
Oh, it isn't at all, Tom. There's nothing as important as your health. You're tearing yourself to pieces. Come home with me. Please.
Leave me alone.
Tom.
I mean it. Leave me alone. I'm working and you're interrupting me. Do I have to get your permission to do my job?
You're not working. You're slaving.
All right, all right. Please leave me alone.
All right, Tom.
She strides out. Later, sunlight shines into the lab through an open window. Tom stares at a letter.
Come in.
Michael enters, holding a note.
Tom.
Yes?
I don't understand these specifications. This clay, what kind of a clay is it?
Pipe clay, ordinary pipe clay. Wind the wire around it.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Michael.
Hmm?
Suppose this shop were to pass out of my hands, become the property of someone else. Would it make any difference?
Not to us, as long as you are here with us.
Supposing I took in General Powell as a partner. And, of course, Mr. Taggart.
Well, if you have to. Sounds very good.
That's all, Mike.
With a worried look, Michael leaves. Now, a nurse opens the door to an opulent bedroom, gesturing for Tom to be quiet.
Only a minute or two, please.
I had no idea he was like that.
He's very, very ill.
Tom walks over to General Powell's bed, where a doctor stands by the old man's side, timing his pulse with a gold pocket watch. The doctor glowers at Tom, then leaves. The general holds out his hand, and Tom takes it.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, General.
I'm glad you came.
I'd have come before this if I'd known you were ill. Why do you keep it a secret? Why didn't you let your friends know?
Is everything all right?
Oh, fine.
Sure?
Sure. Everything's smooth as silk. Money piling in like corn in a crib.
I saw Taggart the other day. He said something about helping you.
Helping me? I don't need any help.
Don't put too much faith in Taggart.
Now, don't you worry about that, General. You just hurry up and get well.
I'm doing my best, Tom. I want to be around when you get that light. Light.
You will be, General.
The doctor taps Tom on the shoulder and shifts his eyes toward the door. Now, Tom sits holding his hat as Taggart paces in his office.
So, it looks as though General Powell won't be up and around for quite a while, well, the fact is, I can't wait that long. I've got to have the money right away.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Edison. How much money do you want?
Well, with one thing and another, it's quite a tidy sum.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. General Powell thinks that you're a man with a future. And any man the general believes in is all right with me. Just name your figure.
Well, what would you say to $50,000?
Mm-hmm. $50,000. Suppose I let you have $100,000.
$100,000?
That's right.
Well, I don't need that much, Mr. Taggart.
You may, can't ever tell. That's in the future. For the present, I'm in a position to give you a check for $100,000 right now.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. I wish I could tell you how obliged I am.
Not at all, not at all.
I can go on experimenting for maybe 3 years now without any worry.
Naturally, if I let you have this money, I should expect to assume some authority in deciding the kind of work you do at Menlo Park.
Oh, you would?
Well, now, don't misunderstand me. I simply want the right to make sure that whatever you undertake to do is commercially profitable. Sort of a little string on my money, if you don't mind.
But I do mind. I'm an inventor. I can't be told what to do. I've got to do the things I want to do. I work with ideas, visionary things. Nobody, not even I, know how useful they're going to be or how profitable until I've had a chance to work them out my own way.
You're in a very bad spot to ask for your own way, Mr. Edison.
Yes, I am. And you're willing to take advantage of it. You want to put me on a chain.
Tom heads for the door.
Well, now, you think it over.
No, that won't be necessary. I don't want your money at that price. I prefer to hang on somehow until General Powell is able to talk to me. Thank you.
Tom closes the door and steps into the outer office, where Taggart's secretary stops him.
Mr. Edison, General Powell is dead.
As the secretary brushes by to Taggart's office, Tom stands holding his hat, a frown fixed on his face. He looks down, then slowly walks through the empty office of the Gold Indicator Company. Now, the laboratory clock reads 6 o'clock. Tom sits, surrounded by a dozen workers.
Men, this might be a fine time for us all to sit down and have a good cry. But we're not going to do that because it won't get us anywhere. I know that we've been in tough spots before, but we always seem to come up with something at the last minute, something that pulled us through. Remember the chemical telegraph? That was a windfall. The quadruplex and the electric pen? Those things just sort of seem to come along when we need them most. But this time, nothing has happened. I don't know, maybe I've been expecting a miracle, but anyway, it hasn't happened. And I haven't any more time. We're at the end of our rope. And, boys, if you'll forgive me for putting it this way, you're discharged.
Hold out for a few more days, Tom. I know I'll work out this new telegraph thing. Thanks, Jack. We can't hold out. You've got to have money to live on, and so do I. And we haven't any money, except I've been able to scrape enough together to pay you off in full.
Tom, may I say just a word?
No. The less said, the better right now.
Men, I want to thank you all for what you've done for me. Pay them off, that's all.
He hands Michael a box of envelopes. Sadness in their faces, the men turn and follow Michael across the lab. Holding a broom, Ben Ells trails behind the group. He glances back at Tom, who holds his head in his hands. Later, Tom walks up to the darkened front porch of his house, his hands in his pockets. He goes in and takes off his hat in the front hall. In the upstairs nursery, Mary puts the children to bed.
Oh, there's Papa.
Yeah.
Mary turns from Tom Jr. and tucks in Marion. Downstairs in the parlor, Tom collapses into a chair. He puts his feet up and closes his eyes. Behind him, Mary takes slow steps down the stairs. She stops a short distance from Tom, her expression serious.
Hello, Tom.
She sits down stiffly across from him.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Mary.
Tom rubs his furrowed brow, his eyes closed.
I don't suppose it's any use to tell you I'm sorry, is it?
I don't know. You might try.
We'll be all right if I try tomorrow. I'm dog tired.
Tom, we've got something to settle.
Not now, dear.
Yes, right now, Tom. I want to know just how much this light means to you. I want the truth. Is there anything real to it, or are you just too stubborn to give it up?
It's very real to me, Mary.
But are you right about it? Is everybody else in the world wrong? Is there any chance, I don't care how small, of you ever finding it?
Can't we discuss it in the morning, please, Mary?
All right, Tom. In the morning.
Tom falls asleep. Mary turns to go, then glances back at him. She crosses to the window and closes it. Later, light streams through the window as Tom sleeps in the chair, his hands folded over an afghan. Mary enters and leans over him.
Tom.
Tom awakens. He blinks at Mary, then stretches.
Well, must have dropped off. Well, I've been sleeping here all night.
He pulls up the afghan.
You kind of tucked me in a little, didn't you?
I couldn't let you catch cold, Tom.
Mary takes a deep breath and swallows hard.
Now we've got to talk this out.
Why? I just had the funniest dream. I was dreaming about winter. It was so cold that the trees couldn't shake. And daybreak froze fast just as it was trying to dawn.
He takes her hand.
Yes, ma'am, all creation was freezing. The question was whether I was going to stay snug in bed or get up and see what had happened. Well, I got up. And the earth had frozen fast on its axis. Couldn't turn around. Everything was pitch dark, too. The sun had got jammed in between two cakes of ice and was working so hard to get loose that it froze in its own sweat. Well, sir, I started off cross-country to see what could be done, and I met a bear. I told him what had happened, and he just naturally bounced up and down on the ice so hard that the hot oil welled out all over him. Then I picked Mr. Bear up, and I held him over the Earth's axis, and I let the hot oil drip down. Then I gave the Earth's cogwheel a little kick backwards till I got the sun loose. The earth gave a grunt and began to move. And the sun waked up beautiful.
Mary kneels beside him.
I lit my pipe by the light of his topknot. Broke off a piece for myself. Yes, ma'am, I walked home with sunrise in my pocket.
Mary's eyes fill with tears.
Oh, Tom, that's beautiful. You go on with your work. Go right ahead with your light. Don't listen to anyone who tries to stop you. Don't even listen to me if I talk against it. Nothing in the world can happen to us as long as you can dream like that.
The dimples in Tom's cheeks deepen as he squeezes Mary's hand.
Well, now, Mary, maybe I didn't dream it exactly. Maybe I got it mixed up with an old tall tale my mother used to tell me.
No, I'd rather have it a dream. Please let it be a dream.
All right. You feel better that way.
She kisses him tenderly.
Thank you.
I think you are a couple of laps ahead of me all the time.
Now, Tom walks up steps to the columned porch of his laboratory and unlocks the front door. Holding the door ajar, Tom cocks his head and listens, then comes inside. He looks around with a surprised gaze. All his men are hard at work. Wearing aprons tied around their waists, the men bend over machinery, tinkering with pistons and gears. Sparks fly from a rotating wheel. Slowly, Tom walks upstairs to the upper level, where Ben sweeps the hardwood floor vigorously with a broom. A smile tugs at the corners of Tom's mouth as he glances around at the busy workstations. Various projects are spread out in front of a dozen men. Hands in his trouser pockets, Tom strolls among the tables, peering at the work, then moving on. With his pipe in his mouth, Michael Simon twirls a screwdriver into a contraption with a round silver bell attached to one of its sides. As Tom walks by, Michael takes the pipe out of his mouth and smiles. Tom wanders over to another table where Bob Ashton adjusts wires on a small black box. Tom touches the box.
I told you needed a heavier spring. How many times do I have to tell you to make you understand?
A smile spreads across Bob's bearded face. Nearby, Jack Bigelow taps a telegraph key attached to two turntables.
Getting anywhere with a repeating telegraph, Jack?
Not yet, but we'll get it.
Oh, Tom.
Tom walks away. Jack follows him. Ben wanders over to the turntables. He eyes them with curiosity, then flips a switch.
Here, don't monkey with that.
Jack hurries over and reaches for the switch. Tom stops him.
That's all right.
It certainly put up a loud holler.
Never heard it make that noise before.
Tom flips the switch again.
Not a machine noise.
It seems to be coming from the desk.
Very odd.
On a turntable, a metal arm holds a needle over a rotating disc. Tom taps a telegraph key. The needle pecks tiny holes into the disc. Tom flips a switch. At high speed, the needle scrapes grooves into the disc. Biting his lip, Tom heads for the stairs.
Mike, I'll be in my office if anyone wants me. I've got some drawings to make.
Yeah. As Tom leaves, Ben flips the switch again. Now in his office, Tom finishes a drawing. A curved arm holds a needle in place above a cylinder, which rotates horizontally on a rod, like meat on a spit. The needle digs grooves into the sides of the cylinder.
Make this up as fast as you can, Liv.
What is it? Is something for the light?
No. Oh, I hope it's something that'll keep the sheriff away.
Tom hands the drawing to Michael Simon, who studies it for a moment. He glances back at Tom, huddled over the drawing board. With a shrug, Michael carries the drawing away. Now, Michael chews on his pipe stem as he carries the finished model up the stairs to the laboratory's second floor. Smiling at Tom, he sets the model on a table. The men gather around. The model sits on a rectangular wooden base 2 feet wide. A metal rod, held in place by two brackets, slides through a silver-colored cylinder. The rod has a handle on one end and a thick metal wheel on the other. A needle arm attached to the base swings out over the cylinder. The men look on as Tom wraps a sheet of silver foil around the cylinder and fastens it tight. He fits the narrow end of a cone into an opening on top of the needle arm. He moves the arm until the needle point touches the foil on the cylinder. As he turns the handle, making the cylinder rotate, Tom speaks into the cone.
Hello, hello, hello. Mary had a little lamb. It's pleased.
The needle bears down hard on the foil, tearing it. Frowning, Tom stops the machine. As the men watch closely, Tom wraps a new piece of foil around the cylinder, fastens it tight, then gently swivels the needle point back into place. Finally, he reattaches the cone. As he slowly turns the handle, he leans close to the cone and speaks directly into it.
Hello, hello, hello. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. Ha, ha, ha.
As Tom talks, the needle etches a smooth groove into the foil, starting at one end of the cylinder. The groove winds around the cylinder, covering nearly one-third of the foil. Tom stops the machine. He wets his lips and glances at the men around the table. Ben eyes Tom with a skeptical look. Tom places the needle back at the starting point and turns the handle.
Hello, hello, hello.
Tom grins as the needle runs over the grooves in the foil.
It bleeds as white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. Ha, ha, ha.
Smiling, the men crowd around Tom.
I say.
That's a wonderful invention.
It's no invention. Been there waiting for us all the time.
You mean it was an accident?
No, no. I don't think it was an accident.
Now, a boy hawks newspapers.
Edison invents talking machine. Read all about the machine that talks.
One stack of papers sits on Tom's desk.
Owed you and Bill Uo. You're certainly back on the right hook. This talking machine is a gold mine, paying off bigger than the Comstock load.
Tom holds his baby son.
Look, Dash. Here's what I want you to do. I want to get a record of your voice at its loudest. So come on now. Before your mother comes in, be a good boy and give a good cry into this thing, will you, Dash?
Don't he cry enough as it is?
Go on, turn it. Come on, Dash, cry now. Come on, boy. Look, Dash, cry.
Tom holds the baby up to the machine as Bunt turns the handle.
Look, Dash.
Tom makes faces.
Dash, will you please cry? Dash, look.
Tom pretends to chew. Bunt pulls at the corners of his mouth with his fingers. Bunt turns the handle on the machine. Mary walks in.
Well, I must say.
I wanted him to cry a little, but he would only laugh.
Well, I should think he would, watching you two perform. Come
she
on,
carries Dash away. Michael comes in.
There's a crowd of newspaper men who want to see you.
What about? I'm busy now.
Well, they want to know how far you've got with the electric light.
I wish I knew myself. Bunt, you go out and talk to them, will you? Tell them I'll be glad to give them an interview when I have something more definite about the light.
I see. You're still in the dark about the light.
Bunt leaves the room.
You better duck.
A half dozen reporters queue outside. In his office, Tom opens the closet door and crawls inside.
One at a time.
What is this about a lady?
Mr. Edison can't see anybody at present. However, if there's anything I can do for you.
Who are you?
I have been Mr. Edison's associate and confidant for many, many years.
Oh, maybe you invented Edison, huh?
This is not a subject for levity, young man. Mr. Edison and I were out west together as telegraph operators, and I may say, in all modesty, of course, that whatever Tom knows about telegraphy, I taught him. I was always exceptional as an instructor. To illustrate, I was once in a Western telegraph station so lonely that I caught a big rattlesnake and brought him into my office for company.
and I named him Pete.
Gentlemen, in the long, cold winter night hours, I taught Pete to sing out the Morse code with his rattles.
Frowning, the reporter stopped taking notes.
Well, sir, snake got away. Disappeared. One day, I chanced to be out bear hunting, and I ran across a great big rattlesnake in the brush, and I brought my gun down on him, and would you believe it? He rattled out, "Stop, Bunt, don't shoot, it's me, Pete."
Just a minute, Mr.
Cabot. James J. Cabot. Known over the wires as Bunt.
Mm-hmm. How do you do? But Mr. Cabot, we didn't come here to listen to your snake stories. We came here to interview Mr. Edison.
Mr. Edison is shut up in his laboratory. In fact, he's on the verge of a great discovery.
Oh, what is it? That's what we came to find out. We're from New York.
Gentlemen, I'm not at liberty to say.
Is it the electric light?
Well, that's something you'll have to find out from Mr. Edison himself.
Well, why doesn't he tell us? Personally, I don't believe he has a light, and I don't think he ever will have.
Oh, you don't, eh?
No, I don't, eh? And what's more, I think he hasn't got the nerve to come out here and tell us. He's hiding inside there behind you.
Why, you little pipsqueak, he's inside there, all right, because he has got the light.
You mean he's actually discovered it?
Yeah.
He's got it now? Cool.
Yes.
Really?
Why hasn't he announced it?
One thing at a time. He just finished with the talking machine. You can't let these big inventions pile up on the public.
Thank you, Mr. Kevin.
Right.
The reporters rush off.
Pipsqueak. I guess I gave him an earful. Sure did.
Now, a headline. Edison claims incandescent lamp is reality. In his laboratory, Edison sits at a table reading the newspaper as Bunt stands behind him.
Ordinarily, I'm a reticent fella. But he made me so mad.
You knew I didn't have the light. I'm miles away from it.
I never thought anybody'd believe me.
Everybody reads the paper will believe it. Everybody except the men of science, and they'll skin me alive.
Well, I guess maybe I better make myself scarce for a while. I had the money I'd blow. Can I take $20, Tom?
Tom digs into his pocket and hands some cash to Bunt. Bunt gives him back one bill.
There's a 10 I owe you.
Like to keep even, don't you?
Bunt nods.
Well, take care of yourself.
Sure. I'm awful sorry about that little blunder I made. Why don't you tell him it's my fault? Blame it on me.
No, it's all right, Bunt. It's all right. Matter of fact, I'm kind of glad it happened. Now I've got to get the light.
As Bunt leaves, Tom gets to work. Now in his office, Taggart meets with two men.
Taggart, gas stocks have gone down another point.
Gentlemen, if you please, make yourselves easy. There isn't any light.
How do you know?
It's my business to know. There's no electric light and there never will be. It's as impossible as perpetual motion.
Then we ought to expose this man.
I shan't say a word against him. I don't have to. He's hung himself. He's made a statement that isn't true and never will be true. In the field of science, that sort of thing is suicide.
That's right. By George, he's ruined himself.
Now, men make speeches to crowds.
Edison's claims are as extravagant as a fairy tale. He knows, or should know, that it's as impossible as perpetual motion.
I say to you in all sincerity that these statements about an electric light are without any scientific foundation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Edison refuses to demonstrate his mysterious electric light. We can easily assume why he refuses. Because there's no such light.
Now, in the laboratory, Tom and his men gaze at a glowing wire inside a glass tube. It flares, then dies out.
Burned out again.
Well, that won't work. We'll have to try something else.
But what? We've tried dozens of metals. Tin, copper, iron, iridium, brass, nickel.
We'll have to try hundreds more, maybe thousands. But I know that somewhere in this universe is a substance which will work, and we're going to find it.
Now, Tom's men work at long tables covered with test tubes, Bunsen burners, and microscopes. Words appear, then disappear, one by one. August, September, October, November, December. Tom writes lists in a notebook. He crosses out the items one by one as a montage of failed experiments unfolds. Zinc, phosphorus, manganese, lead, mercury, arsenic, maple, birch, beechwood. Tom shakes his head. Now, Tom assembles yet another experiment as his men watch.
You've got to have a light much brighter for its size than any gas lighter. It's no good at all.
If platinum won't give it to us, I don't know what will.
transfer connected?
Yeah.
The wire glows briefly, then fades. Tom's brow furrows. His chest rises and falls in a deep sigh.
Well, it ought to work, but it won't. Must be some reason we haven't thought of. Or else we haven't got the right material.
Tom absently pulls out an eyebrow hair. He gazes at it, then yanks a long hair out of Bob Ashton's bushy beard.
Tried everything but this.
Later, he draws a line through the words, Ashton's beard. Now at home, Dash sits by the phonograph.
Now cry, son, cry.
Dash sucks on a candy cane. Tom takes it away and turns the handle on the phonograph.
Now cry, 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 son, cry.
Mary sits nearby with her young daughter, Marion.
Doesn't he ever cry?
Yes, quite frequently.
Never when I'm around. Trying to get him to cry since he was 9 months old. Come on, son, cry, please. Now cry, cry, son, cry.
Mary reads a newspaper.
Oh, Tom, this is terrible.
What's terrible?
Listen to this. When asked for an opinion of Mr. Edison's claim, the professor stated, there is no room in the world of science for a charlatan. Tom.
There. There. Do you hear that? Your father's a faker. Everybody says so. Well, don't you feel... Yeah. Doesn't care. I'm disgraced, and he sits here calm and peaceful. Read it to him again slowly. Maybe we can get him to understand.
I hope I never lay eyes on that Bunt Cavett again.
No, don't be too hard on Bunt. He and I had some good times together.
I'd like to shake his head until his brains rattle.
Look, son, cry, please.
I don't suppose Bunt has enough brains in his head to rattle.
No, sort of a vacuum, I guess. Well, even a vacuum can be useful at times. I remember I had an old bird dog once. Vacuum. Vacuum. By George.
Tom runs to a telephone.
What on...
He cranks the handle.
Simon! Simon! We need a vacuum. That's what we've been looking for. The wire can't burn brightly enough without melting because it's exposed to the open air. Too much oxygen. We'll enclose the wire in a glass globe. Pump out the air, turn on the current, and see what happens. Now, tonight!
Now, in the laboratory, Tom stares intently at a bell-shaped glass dome connected to a pump. Michael pushes the ends of a lever, moving two pistons up and down like a seesaw.
How's that?
That'll do for the present.
Ooh, thanks.
All right, turn on the current.
The coiled wire inside the glass dome glows.
She burns a lot brighter now.
Not bright enough. We'll have to improve the vacuum.
But, Tom, I've got it down to 100,000th of an atmosphere already.
Have to be better than that.
But we can't do it, not with this pump.
There's a mercury pump over at Princeton. It might do the trick. I wonder if we can borrow that.
Now, standing on a step stool, Michael fills a funnel at the top of a 6-foot-tall pump.
We got our vacuum, Mike? It's as good as we'll ever get.
All right, turn on the current.
A clear glass bulb is attached to the pump.
Well, here we go.
Tom brushes a wire across the top of the bulb. The bulb glows for a moment, then goes out. Tom brushes the wire repeatedly over the bulb. Nothing happens.
Well, we failed again. That's the net result of 9,000 experiments.
Too bad, Tom. We know the work you have done. We are as sorry as you are that you didn't get results.
Results? Man, I got a lot of results. I know 9,000 things now that won't work.
As Tom heads downstairs, Michael turns to Bob.
That's a shame.
Downstairs, Tom walks with his hands buried in his pockets. A wavy-haired boy of 16 appears at the door. Tom lets him in.
I'd like to see Mr. Edison, please.
What about?
Well, I want to study to be an inventor.
Tom closes the door.
You do, huh? Why?
Oh, because inventors make things, and I like to make things.
Look.
The boy takes out a pocket knife.
See that?
He swivels open the blade.
See how easy it works?
Let's see it again. Pretty good.
I made it myself. I was always breaking my thumbnail.
Tom hands over his own knife.
Think you can make me one?
I don't know. I might. It ain't much of a knife, is it?
Well, it will be when you fix it up.
Come. Don't feed it too bad.
Mr. Ells, this young man wants to be an inventor. What's your name?
Jimmy Price.
All right, Jimmy, this is Mr. Ells. Jimmy's going to work here with us. Where are you staying, Jimmy? I mean, where are you sleeping?
Well, for the time being, I guess I'll just have to sleep right here.
Tom gives the boy a knowing smile.
Take him over to the boarding house. Get him a good meal in a room.
Jimmy lingers by the door.
What's the matter?
Gosh. Are you Thomas Edison?
Well, I think I am, Jimmy. Sometimes I get a little confused about it. You report at 8 in the morning for work.
Tom pats Jimmy on the back. Now, a headline. Edison's light experiments, failure, inventor on wrong track. Now in his laboratory, a lock of Tom's wavy hair falls over his forehead as he rubs a thread through a pile of black powder. His men arrive.
Morning, Tom.
Good morning, boys.
Well, Aston.
Morning.
Bob walks over to Tom, who examines the blackened thread.
For the light?
Mm-hmm. We're going to use carbon for a filament instead of a metal.
Filament? I never heard that word before.
Neither did I. Just made it up. That's ordinary sewing thread. I want you to put it in the oven and bake it for about an hour, you see? Get it thoroughly impregnated with carbon first, the way this is. Then we'll put it in a bulb and try it.
The thread's too delicate, Tom. The heat'll break it.
Well, we'll try it anyway.
But we've tried carbon before.
Not carbonized thread.
That isn't very scientific, Tom.
I told you we had to leave science behind. Come on, I'll get this.
Now, a thin-faced man wears his shirt sleeves rolled up as he holds a foot-long glass tube over a flame. He puts one end in his mouth and blows, twisting the tube slowly. A bubble grows in the center of the tube. In the next room, Bob uses tongs to hold a hand-sized wooden box. He carries it to the glassblower's work table. Steam rises as the glassblower removes the lid from the box and lifts out a U-shaped filament with a pair of metal pincers. Later, he carefully feeds the filament into the glass tube as Jimmy, Bob, and Michael watch.
Careful, don't break that filament.
It's number 65.
Did it break? Is it all right?
It's going to be all right. Look, it's holding together.
The glass blower scrapes one end of the glass tube with a metal file. He gently taps on the end, breaking it off cleanly. Then he scores and breaks off the other end, leaving a glass bulb.
Take it up to Mr. Edison, but be careful.
Bob hands the bulb to Jimmy.
I'll be right up.
Jimmy holds the fragile glass bulb by one thin stem. Fixing his gaze on it, he sprints quickly up the stairs. He trips on the top step and falls.
Great guns, Jimmy. Can't you stand on your feet?
Jimmy picks himself up off the floor where the bulb lies shattered in pieces.
That goes a whole day's work.
With tears in his eyes, Jimmy turns away. Later, the glass blower prepares another bulb. Tom holds it up and gazes at it.
Jimmy! Jimmy!
Yes?
Jimmy slouches on the floor behind a door, his back to the wall. With a sigh, he slowly pulls himself to his feet. Hanging his head, he shuffles over to Tom, who holds out the new bulb.
Careful of this one now. It's still hot.
Jimmy looks up, his eyes wide.
Come on, Jimmy. We're wasting time.
A smile spreads across Jimmy's tear-stained face.
Come on.
He takes the bulb. Holding it carefully in one hand and shielding it with the other, Jimmy walks to the stairs. Bob follows a few paces behind, keeping his arms stretched forward. On the stairs, Jimmy takes slow, cautious steps. Bob keeps his eyes riveted on the boy. At the top of the stairs, Jimmy's muscles relax. He crosses the room to the experiment table where the men have gathered. With a triumphant smile, Jimmy hands the bulb to Tom.
Nice thing about mistakes, they don't have to be permanent. I had to learn that myself when I was a kid.
Jimmy beams. Now, Tom writes in a notebook.
Horseshoe filament of cotton sewing thread. Impregnated with carbon and sealed in a vacuum.
Tom closes the notebook and hands it to Michael.
All right, we'll give it the life test. Almost afraid to turn the switch. Here we go.
He throws the switch. A radiant light emanates from the bulb. Tom turns down the flame on a gas jet overhead, then takes a seat directly in front of the bulb. A steady light washes over Tom's face, accenting the tiny creases in the corners of his eyes. Light brightens the faces of the men ringing the table. Bob arches his thick, dark eyebrows. Ben's lips part as light reflects off his glasses. The corners of Tom's mouth pull into a tentative smile as he stares at the glowing bulb.
Wow. Looks as if this one is going to last.
The next morning, some of the men arrive. Tom sits in the same chair, staring at the burning bulb. Bob stands nearby. At the table, Jimmy rests his head on his arms.
Still burning.
Well, must be 7 o'clock.
Yeah, and after. How about a cup of coffee?
No. Have a glass of milk. Bring a glass for Jimmy, too.
Sure.
Piece of pie. Ashton, you better go home and get some sleep.
Bob unties his apron.
You've been here all night.
Now, at home, Mary tucks her daughter into bed, then sets a chair at the bedside.
I want to fall out of bed, Mama.
Mary smiles at her daughter, Marion, then leans over a crib. She pulls a blanket up to Dash's chin and gives him a kiss. With a fond glance at Dash, she blows out the lamp. Now, in the laboratory, the light bulb still glows. Tom and Jimmy sit in front of it, side by side. They eat pieces of pie and glasses of milk sit nearby. Tom winks at Jimmy. Dawn. Mary awakens. She reaches to the empty pillow next to her, then gazes at the clock on the bedside table. It reads 6:30. In the laboratory, Tom stares at the glowing bulb as Michael consults his pocket watch. Michael beckons to Bob, then taps the watch. Bob hands Michael some money, and they shake hands. Now, in the kids' bedroom.
Come on.
Can I lace my shoes? Mm-hmm. Don't I look pretty in my pink dress?
Oh, you do.
In the laboratory.
Oh, Genevieve, sweet Genevieve, the day may come, the day may go. What?
Nighttime. The men sit around the glowing bulb, singing. Tom plays a pipe organ. At home, Mary leans against an open window. Mary glances at a clock. 2 a.m. Now, in the laboratory, everyone slumbers as Tom plays the organ. Tom yawns as he gets up and glances around the room. He picks up a wooden box with a circular blade mounted inside. Smirking, he rapidly turns the box's handle. Everyone jumps up. Bob makes an adjustment. The light glows with the same strength.
Give it all a little take.
The filament glows brighter, then goes out.
Oh. Turn up the gas.
Jack turns up the gas jet. The room brightens. Bob checks his watch.
40 hours.
My.
Well, if it'll burn 40 hours, it'll burn 400.
Tom smashes the bulb. The men jump. Holding the broken bulb up to the light of the gas jet, Tom examines it, then hands it to Bob.
Put that filament under a microscope. What's the date?
October the 21st.
With an enigmatic smile, Tom walks over to a corner desk, lights a gas jet, and sits down. He taps a finger on a telegraph key as the men watch.
He's calling the newspapers. He's going to light New York City.
Good. I'm going to bed.
Now, newspaper headlines. Edison invents incandescent lamp. Edison asks for franchise to light city of New York. Edison asks Alderman to inspect new light system at Menlo Park. Now in his office, Jim Taggart paces.
Take it easy, Jim. All worry ever got me was indigestion.
Look, Snaid, if Edison gets the franchise to light this town, I may as well make a bonfire of my gas stocks.
Well, let him have it. The light probably won't work.
That's the trouble. It will work. Everything Edison invents works, and works well. I found that out to my sorrow.
And what do you want me to do?
Stop him from getting that franchise.
Later.
I see no reason, gentlemen, why Mr. Thomas A. Edison should not be granted a franchise to electrically illuminate the specified district under discussion.
Mr. Chairman, your own enthusiasm is not shared by all of us by a long shot. We are asked to let this man use New York as a testing ground for his...
The light has been tested thoroughly. You've been shown that its fire hazard is so much less than that of gas that...
Just a minute. Gas is not on trial here.
No, but I can see that the electric light is. Gentlemen, I've told you that we're willing to put our wires underground so they will not overburden your telephone poles. I've assured you we'll take every other necessary precaution.
I still say the risk is too great for his impossible claims.
But they're not impossible. And even if they were, my associates and I are the ones taking the risk. We're not asking New York City for any financial aid. We're merely asking for permission to install our equipment at our own risk, at our own expense, and if we fail, at our own loss.
Well, that seems fair enough. Shall we vote on it?
Yeah.
Mr. Edison, one thing more, if you please. You know that no dynamo in existence is capable of producing the current necessary to supply your lighting system.
Yes, sir, that's quite true.
Then how do you propose to perform this miracle?
I'm going to build a dynamo. I'm going to build a dynamo big enough to do the job.
One word, please. I demand to be heard.
Mr. Taggart, this is extremely presumptuous.
Let him speak. He's a taxpayer.
Now, make it brief, Mr. Taggart.
Thank you.
Taggart passes through a gate separating the board from the audience.
I want to respectfully call the attention of this board to the law which requires that a specified time limit be put on all contracts. Mr. Edison's project must be completed on some definite day. That's the law. Mr. Edison, how long will this experiment of yours take?
It won't be an experiment, Mr. Taggart.
Please, don't let's quibble. How long will it take?
It'll take a year, perhaps two.
There we are, gentlemen. 1 year, perhaps two. That means that for 2 years, the streets of the city of New York are to be torn up and traffic at a standstill. As a taxpayer, I protest against such an outrage. I protest with all the vehemence at my command.
Well, what would you suggest, then?
I suggest that Mr. Edison be limited to 3 months.
Can you do it in 3 months, Mr. Edison?
No, sir.
And I doubt if Mr. Taggart could pipe the same area for gas in 3 months.
The gas is already there, Mr. Edison, functioning for the benefit of thousands of grateful taxpayers. I say those taxpayers have rights. Rights it's the duty of this board to protect.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Edison.
I didn't come here this morning to deprive the taxpayers of any rights. I'm inviting this board to let them make use of a discovery which will endanger and handicap no one but those who are afraid of its competition with their own monopolies. Your own experts have shown you that the electric light is practical. Its enemies know that it will be a cheaper form of illumination than gas, and that's the reason they're against it. But that's not the reason I'm fighting for it. I didn't hunt for it over a period of years because I thought there'd be money at the end of the search. It's because I've always known that if we could find a light without a flame, that you could put into homes where men and women are ruining their eyesight under oil lamps and gas jets, where surgeons are performing operations, where doctors are working over microscopes, men down in coal mines, people everywhere, could have a safer and a brighter light, that I'd be doing something that every one of them would be grateful to me for, whether they ever paid me in money or not. Now that light has been found. What are you going to do about it?
Could you completely pipe that district in 6 months, Mr. Taggart?
Easily.
All right, then. Let's say 6 months. How's that? Shall we vote on it, gentlemen?
Yes.
All in favor of granting the franchise under discussion?
Aye.
All against?
Nay.
The ayes have it. Franchise is granted. I congratulate you, Mr. Edison.
6 months. That's about September the 4th. I'll have to hurry. Thank you, sir.
Now, a sign on a brick building reads, Edison Illuminating Company, Pearl Street Station. Inside, Tom uses a pointer to indicate a length of Pearl Street on a giant street map of New York City. Now a montage. Men lay pipe in a ditch. Delivery men carry boxes into the power station. Tom's men hoist heavy pieces of machinery into place. Tom looks over blueprints. Bob tests dozens of light bulbs. Men fit a huge wheel onto the side of a dynamo. Electric cords run across the ceiling and down a wall. Men screw light bulbs into a chandelier. Now a date appears, September 4, 1882. Ben and Jimmy distribute drinks and sandwiches to the men as they work.
Oh, thanks.
Holding a small pail, Bunt looks over Tom's shoulder.
What do we call her, boys?
She's the biggest in the world.
All right, we'll call her Jumbo.
I christen you Jumbo.
Yeah. Bunt pretends to pour.
Came to waste it.
They sip from pails. Now a headline. New York anxiously awaits electric light test. In the power station, Bob checks his watch.
2 o'clock. 5 hours to spare.
Start in for a load test.
Stand by for a full load test, boys.
The men take their places. Michael nods.
Number one?
A man turns a valve. The governor, a heart-shaped metal unit, rotates, spinning one dynamo's massive wheel.
All right, number two.
Jack turns a valve on a second dynamo. Its governor rotates, the wheel spins. As the two dynamos whir side by side, Tom walks over to Bob.
Throw them in parallel.
Bob pulls down one lever, then another. The dynamos wobble. Smoke pours out. Tom runs over to one dynamo and tries to pull a lever. It won't budge. Another man beats his hands against a lever as hard as he can. He ducks as sparks fly. The air fills with smoke. Some men bolt for the door. Tom and Michael run to the valves and turn them frantically, like steering wheels. Side by side, the men fight for control as the shaking dynamos spew more smoke. Michael spins the valve.
Stop it!
Tom shuts down his dynamo, then grabs Michael's valve and spins it. The dynamo slows, then stops. Across the room, a dozen men cowering behind a machine slowly rise to their feet.
The engines were not running at the same speed. One dynamo was pulling the other as a motor.
Trouble must be with those governors.
He glances up at the heart-shaped metal units.
We'll have to connect those governors together with a shaft.
But we can't do it now, Tom. It's too big a job.
Send one of the men down to Girk Street and get 15 feet of one-inch steel shafting.
5 hours are not enough, Tom. We haven't got the time.
We haven't got time to talk about it. Go and do it. Right. Come on, man. Let's see what damage was done now.
Now, in a restaurant, Taggart's secretary runs to his boss's table.
Why don't they play some cheerful music?
Mr. Taggart.
Go away, Hall. Go away.
But, Mr. Taggart, listen.
Hall whispers in Taggart's ear.
Very interesting, very interesting.
I thought you'd like to know, sir.
Very thoughtful of you, Hall. Thank you. Gentlemen, I've just received very heartening news.
But what is it?
Our friend Edison has stumbled. At the last minute, he has miscalculated. His dynamos have broken down.
Taggart clinks wine glasses with his two companions.
What lovely music.
Now, a crowd gathers on the dark street outside the power station. Inside, Edison's men work.
Other way.
The men connect the metal shaft to the two governors.
Is it fine?
Running nice and slow.
All right.
Mary comes in.
Tom, what happened?
Oh, Jumbo developed some bugs at the last minute.
Oh, look at your trousers, Tom, your good blue shoes.
His pant leg is ripped.
How do you suppose that happened?
Mary takes a closer look at Tom's torn trousers.
I'll never be able to fix that.
She brushes off his grimy clothes as he looks around.
What's the matter, dear?
I'm worried.
About the dynamos?
Suppose they fail to work.
They won't.
You should have been here a while ago. I wish I had your confidence.
I wish I had yours.
Hey, Tom. 1 minute to seven.
Right on the dot. Remind me to give you a big hug and a kiss after a while, will you?
Come on, get out of the way. All ready, boys?
All right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Stand by, boys. Now, number one, take it easy. Take it easy now.
Dynamo number one comes to life. Dynamo number two starts up. Tom eyes the two governors situated on top of the dynamos. They rotate in unison. With a smile, Tom walks over to Bob, who stands at a bank of machinery.
All right, throw them in parallel.
Bob pulls a lever, then hesitates.
Go ahead.
Bob pulls the second lever. Lights come on.
Throw in those feeder switches.
Mary stretches out her hand. Tom squeezes it, then stands before a row of levers next to a picture window. Gazing down at the dark street outside, he pulls three levers. Lights appear in windows on both sides of the street. He pulls the final lever. Two rows of streetlights turn on. Pedestrians wave their hats. On the street, horses rear up. In the crowd, one man thumps Taggart on the head, pushing his stovepipe hat down over his eyes. Taggart lifts up the hat, revealing a sour expression on his face. Now, an image of Edison marches over a montage of cityscapes and inventions. Titles appear: New York, Paris, Rome. Edison's hair slowly turns white as more titles appear. Inventions: Ediphone, fluoroscope, cement kiln, mimeograph, multiple telegraph, storage battery, fire alarm, electric motor, motion pictures, projection machine, talking pictures, generator, power transmission, patents. 1,150 patents, creating jobs, industries, wealth. Now, at the awards banquet, the elderly Thomas Edison sits at the speaker's table.
And yet, he would have been a great man, even if he had never invented anything. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you a name that will remain forever vital with courage and vibrant with inspiration. Thomas Alva Edison.
Tom rises from his seat. The audience gives him a standing ovation.
Mr. Toastmaster.
The Toastmaster gestures. Tom moves closer to a trio of microphones.
Mr. Toastmaster, ladies and gentlemen, to be told by the outstanding men and women of your time that you have contributed a great deal to human betterment is pleasant, very pleasant. I'd hardly be human if my heart didn't fill from such a magnificent compliment. But somehow I have not yet achieved a success I want. Earlier this evening, I talked with two school children. Tomorrow, the world will be theirs. It's a troubled world, full of doubt and uncertainty. You say we men of science have been helping it. Are those children and their children going to approve of what we've done? Or are they going to discover too late that science was trusted too much, so that it has turned into a monster whose final triumph is man's own destruction? Some of us are beginning to feel that danger, but it can be avoided. I once had two dynamos. They needed regulating. It was a problem of balance and adjustment. And I feel that the confusion in the world today presents much the same problem. The dynamo of man's God-given ingenuity is running away with the dynamo of his equally God-given humanity. I am too old now to do much more than to say, put those dynamos in balance. Make them work in harmony, as the great designer intended they should. It can be done. What man's mind can conceive, man's character can control. Man must learn that, and then we needn't be afraid of tomorrow. And man will go forward toward more light.
Edison sits down heavily. A tear trickles down his cheek. Blinking back tears, he smiles warmly. Words appear. The end. Fade to black. Credits. Spencer Tracy as Thomas A. Edison, Rita Johnson as Mary Stillwell, Lynn Overman as Bunt Cavett, Charles Coburn as General Powell, Gene Lockhart as Mr. Taggart, Henry Travers as Ben Ells, Felix Brassart as Michael Simon, Peter Godfrey as Bob Ashton, Byron Folger as Edwin Hall, Arthur Aylesworth as Jack Bigelow, Gene Reynolds as Jimmy Price, Addison Richards as Mr. Johnson, Grant Mitchell as Snade, and Paul Hurst as the Sheriff.